The Indian Social Institute, ISI, is a prestigious Jesuit-inspired center for research, training and action for socio-economic development and human rights in India. It was founded in 1951 in Pune but shifted to the Indian capital New Delhi in 1963. The ISI was the brainchild of a brilliant Jesuit priest, Father Jerome D'Souza, an educationist who was remarkably active in the civil society of the days of the independence, for which he was inducted into the Indian Constituent Assembly. Another ISI branch was established in 1963 in Bangalore to deal with issues of southern India. It became independent in 1993. Last week, in the first part of an interview, Father Denzil Fernandez, the executive director of ISI New Delhi, explained how his institute is part of the contribution of the Jesuits in the process of nation building. The institute does research on labor, indigenous, tribal, Dalit, and women's issues. It also imparts training on these issues as well as on legal awareness and empowering of women, which are useful to NGO workers, priests, and religious. The Indian Social Institute Delhi is not affiliated to any university or government institute, but many of its researches are funded by government institutes. Father Fernandez said the setup of the ISI is very secular, with staff and researchers coming from every religious and social background. Today, Father Denzil Fernandez begins the final part of his interview explaining how the institute networks with other organizations and groups.
In 2004, we got the special consultative status at Economic and Social Council of United Nations. And on account of this, we have been participating in the UN meetings, New York, as well as in Geneva. So this is with regard to the UN, but we also have links with various other organizations. The agriculture and food for production, we have close links with them. We have links with Caritas. We have links with the Indo-Global Social Service Society, which is also a church-funded organization. And we are also funded by Miserior for some programs. And we are linked with other large number of social organizations and civil society. In a way, Indian Social Institute is a hub for civil society groups in the country. And even though Indian Social Institute may not conduct programs for the civil society, but a lot of civil society organizations conduct their programs in ISI, and we provide the space and our facilities for them.
Now, Father, talking about finance, you were talking a little about finance, that sometimes government... The Indian government gives you assignment, okay, we have to research on this. How do you manage your finance, Father? Because to run an institute of that sort on an all-India basis, you need finance and support. How do you manage that?
We have our own fund for that. So from the interest of the corpus, we run some part of the programs. And then we have our funded programs, funded by the government and various agencies. And we also hire facilities, you know, conference facilities, and we also have a residence which can accommodate up to 100 people. And through the contribution that comes from there, that is another source of income through which we fund our activities. We also have one more activity, which is the publication. And there are two journals, two quarterlies that come from our institute. One is Social Action. As I told you, it started in 1951. And then we have another journal, a quarterly, Women's Link, which deals with women's issues. In addition, we have two magazines. One is Legal News and Views, which is a monthly magazine on laws and various judgments that come out time and again. This magazine is very popular among law students and lawyers. And we have one Hindi monthly magazine. Its name is Hashye Ki Awaaz. It deals with articles on social issues. And it also tries to accommodate literature of tribals, Dalits, normally those which are not published in other mainstream journals, magazines, newspapers, and media. We publish them. So it is also different forms of literature, which would mean poetry, plays, stories, and so on and so forth, along with the articles.
There must be a good readership base there with regard to these magazines and journals that you publish.
Yeah, we have. Readership is generally institutional. So many institutions subscribe to our, there's many libraries, many colleges, universities, as well as individual professors.
Are they also available online?
They are not available online at the moment, but we are considering. In some cases, we upload one article of each issue on our website. Yeah.
One last question, Father. Your opinion, personal opinion, about the development in India currently. You know, since it opened up to the world market, free market economy, India is regarded as one of those leading upcoming economies along with Brazil, China, Russia, the BRIC countries. People regard India now as a rich country, and we have people heading big companies like Microsoft and Google. I mean, India's image before the world is very glamorous. But down at the grassroots level, what's the situation? Has this gap between the rich and the poor widened, or is it coming close?
After the neoliberal policies were introduced in the early 90s, there was a hope that the growth that India has been seeing would percolate to the weaker and marginalized sections of society. But that is the logic with which our politicians try to justify the neoliberal policies. But what has happened is that this has created a wider gap between the rich and the poor, and certain privileged sections are able to get better benefits, and they are not ready to share the benefits with the weaker sections. And therefore, unless there are strong policies of the government, there's no way in which the gap between the rich and the poor are going to narrow down. There have been some socially relevant laws that have been introduced in India. For example, we've had the Mahatma Gandhi National Rural Employment Guarantee Act.
The Right to Information Act.
Right to Information Act. Then we have the National Food Security Act and the Right to Education Act. So there are several good socially relevant laws that have been passed by the government. And what's important is that the people be aware of these new rights that they have so that they are able to, you know, come up the ladder. Otherwise, the growth that India is seeing, 7-8% growth, is a growth that doesn't percolate down to the weaker sections. And the other aspect is that we are a very fast-growing country as far as population is concerned. And every year, millions of people enter the job market. It is very important that more employment is generated and quality employment is generated to these people. Otherwise, the demographic dividend that we have at the moment could become a demographic disaster. In the last few years, we have noticed that while there has been accelerated economic growth, it has not kept pace with growth in employment. It is known as, in economic terms, jobless growth. So this is dangerous. It could lead to social unrest in the future. So this is a concern.
And do you think that these laws that you have spoken about for the benefit of the marginalized classes, they are bogged down by bureaucracy in the first place and corruption, which denies these people the rights they are entitled to?
Yeah, the governance issues are a problem. But government is also working out ways to get over it. Like, for example, the benefits that the people get is not routed through government officials. They are directly credited to the bank accounts. So there are certain initiatives taken by the government to reduce corruption. The Prime Minister of India at that time, 20 years ago, Rajiv Gandhi himself admitted that if 100 rupees is released by the government, only 15 rupees reaches the beneficiary. So to cut the red tape and make sure that the benefits reach directly to the people, there is now direct cash transfer or direct benefit transfer to the bank accounts of the people. So in some ways, corruption is reduced. But at the same time, there's another reality where not many people have access to banks, and financial inclusion is another area of concern.
That was Indian Jesuit priest Father Denzel Fernandez, executive director of the Indian Social Institute in New Delhi, talking to us about his institute. This has been The Backgrounder, a weekly feature of Vatican Radio's English Service for Asia.